Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This program is brought to you by Chefs Collaborative, a nonprofit with a mission to inspire, educate, and celebrate chefs and food professionals building a better food system. Change menus, change lives. Learn more at chefscollaborative.org.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Greetings and welcome to Animal Instinct here on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Celia Kutcher, also known as the Food Healer, and I am recovering from a really great weekend. I was one of the producers of Dance Parade, if you're in New York and you were able to experience that. So if my voice is a little wonky, I apologize. I was yelling at people for 22 hours, basically. But today I'm really excited. I've got Dr. Taylor Truitt in from the Vet Set. She's one of our standard vets who comes in and talks to us about all kinds of groovy things. The practice is located in Carroll Gardens on Henry Street, and it's a really cute little clinic, and I've only heard fantastic reviews from everyone about it. So, Dr. Truitt, how are you today?
I am glad to be here. So happy it's a Monday.
I know, and it's raining, and it's gross, and everything, but we'll add some sun and some happiness to all our listeners.
Sounds good. All the dogs have been soggy all day long.
Totally. Smelling good out there today. But so today what we're going to talk about is actually, it seems to be that there are these myths that have traveled time and generations that kind of all of us know, and it turns out that they're wrong. And so I had a conversation about this last week. Patty Ace, if you were listening, this is the reason this conversation started, actually. And so we're just going to get started, and we can talk about Patty's dog shortly. First thing I want to talk about, because this is exactly what happened to Patty. She's got a little chihuahua. And she had the dog off leash in one of the parks, which is typical. We do this in New York City in the mornings. And a pit bull or some kind of pit came up to her, bit the dog, and the jaws locked on this dog. This is something that we hear all the time from bull terriers, pit bull terriers. The chihuahua, needless to say, got pretty hurt, but fortunately she's okay. So I want to talk about locking jaws.
They don't officially lock. It is a common myth, but no jaws actually lock. There's no like clamping mechanism like you would see in a ratchet wrench.
So like there's no hinge or anything?
There's no hinge. There's no little grooves in the jaw or anything like that. But what you're looking at is it's a trained, or not necessarily trained, but it's an instinctual behavior in this particular type of breed. And we can talk about the fact that pit bulls aren't really breeds in a moment. It's a breed type that encompasses, it's a large umbrella of a type of dog. But these dogs, though, they've got game. They want to go after something. And when you have a small little chihuahua, it looks like a little squeaky toy.
Yeah, it does.
And they're running around and they're doing their thing. And all of a sudden, their instinct kicks in. And these dogs, they're terriers. Terriers go after small prey, rats, things like that. And all of a sudden, it goes from play to prey. And this dog's going to lock down. I'm going to use lock, sorry, inappropriately. Yeah.
Thanks a lot, okay?
So anyhow, this is Animal Instinct Radio. But they clamp down, and they're not going to let go. And that's the thing. It's a behavioral trait, not an anatomical mechanism of these particular guys. They clamp down, they don't let go, and they're not going to let go until either they are coaxed into it or they decide that they just are on to other things to do.
You know, it's funny because when I first was told this, I was working with horses, and there was a bull terrier that was always around, and everyone's like, oh, keep away from the bull terrier because his jaws lock. And it was like, all right, well, how do they unlock? And one,
they let go.
Well, I had a trainer like tell me, like in dead seriousness, well, what happens is the mouth actually has to fully shut like it does, you know, normally. And then it'll unhinge and open. And it's like it's got someone's arm. So how exactly is the mouth going to completely shut without crushing this person's arm?
So let's take a look then. Let's talk a little bit about the anatomy of the dog's jaw. Okay. So if you look at these big guys, they have a huge amount of muscles around there. It's called the masseter muscles. Mm-hmm. And that's what gives them their big blocky heads. And mm-hmm. so they have strong jaws. We're not going to get around that. But when they bite down, they have decided at that point not to let go. It's mm-hmm. not like there's a hinge mechanism or some sort of trigger or a spring or anything like that. They're just not going to let go. And that's because that particular breed has been instinctually bred into it mm-hmm. to have this idea. Same thing like herding dogs. We'll have herding dogs that, you know, say corgis, border collies, things like that, that were bred to herd either cattle or sheep or whatever. And these particular dogs, they'll herd their owners.
Oh, yeah.
Do they need to herd their owners? No. Is it annoying? Yes. Does it happen? Yes. But these dogs just instinctually are going to nip at the heels, but they nip and they don't bite. And that also is the same idea as they've been taught to use their mouths, which is basically like using our hands mm-hmm. for these particular traits. And so when you're looking at generations and generations, you can have, you know, right now I've got in my practice, I've got some Portuguese water dogs I take off. I've got three generations of these guys.
Cool.
Yeah, it's cool. You get the whole, you got grandpa, great grandpa, and puppy. But here they all are, you know, the oldest one being 10. So you can get generations peeling out really fast.
True.
And you have these traits that are just bred into them. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to get over that. Anytime you pick out a dog and this is the dog that you're going to welcome into your life, you're looking at particular behavior traits to see if it's acceptable for you.
You know, that's a really good point. And I mean, back to the herding dogs. Actually, it might be one of your clients now. There's a dog that I know that lives in our neighborhood. Who is hysterical, and he's a big herder. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if this dog was trained to herd and then was rescued or something. And she had a birthday party for her daughter, who is 4, and all
the
kids got real quiet. Yeah, she walked in, and they were all, like, pinned against the corner of a room with the dog, like, walking around and just grabbing each kid and herding it. Because that's what they do.
They can't help it.
Yeah.
It's hardwired into their to do these particular behaviors.
It's so wild. Do you know if there's any animals in the animal kingdom that actually has a locking jaw, or is this just something we made up?
It doesn't make sense from an anatomical standpoint. I know snakes can unhinge their jaws.
Yeah, they can.
So there's that, but that's true. Not the question on the table. I don't know. Oh, you know what? Perhaps crocodiles or alligators.
That's what I was thinking too.
But the thing is with them too is if you hold down on their jaws, they can't open them.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'll have to get back to you on that in the next year or two when I have time to research this.
After the baby and everything else, it'll be fine.
Yes, I'm having a baby next month.
Yay! So it's like, that's the thing, and I think that's a damn good point of what you're saying, is the fact that if an animal could willingly lock its jaws in terms of having to unlock as well, it mm-hmm. doesn't really seem... Like, if you're looking in my book, okay, this is Celia's, you know, Darwinism theory here, but, like, for an animal to have that attribute, I would think it would be an animal... Maybe like a desert dwelling thing where there isn't a lot of food, and so it has to hold on to whatever it gets. But if it locks the jaw on it, then how in the hell does it open up the jaw to eat this product as well?
Well, yeah, it comes down to that too. It's like, what happens if it gets stuck? You know, it seems like from an evolutionary standpoint, that wouldn't make that much sense.
Yeah.
Because let's say you hinge it too tight, or let's say you break one of these mechanisms or something like that.
Yeah,
if it's like a ratchet, it just doesn't make sense. It seems more based upon strength. That would be, mm-hmm. you know, the better attribute towards it. And then intelligence to be able to know that this is what you're going to do.
That's a good point too.
So these pitties, again, the big umbrella of these guys, they're smart dogs. I really like them.
Yeah.
I had a pit bull Catahoula mix who was a crazy...
Oh, wow.
He was intense. He was a... and he was a big dog to own, for sure. Mm-hmm. And with him, it was interesting. He was a rescue. We think he was going to be a bait dog. So this goes into the entire thing of just, you know, training dogs to do things that I find repulsive.
Yeah.
But these dogs are trained to fight. And then there's bait dogs that they use to trigger these other dogs to go after them. And so unfortunately, this particular dog that I adopted, he absolutely had some emotional issues that we worked through. But he also could never trust most dogs.
Yeah.
Because most dogs, when they came up to him, were not doing nice things to
him. Yeah, totally.
So we ended up, actually, I rehomed him with my very dear friend, who's also a veterinarian named Tanya, because his name was Seven. It still is. He's 13 now. Oh. But he couldn't live with other dogs.
Yeah.
Because he would trigger and he would just go off.
Oh, poor thing.
And it's a form of PTSD.
Yeah.
And dogs do carry PTSD. But when you've got these dogs that we've bred for particular jobs over and over and over again, they're just going to fall into the category and the pattern. Just like if you think about an athlete, they've been trained to do certain things a certain way, and it carries over into how they function the rest of their lives.
Totally.
So
totally.
It becomes hardwired into them, and that's what these dogs do. But they just don't lock. It doesn't make any sense.
Okay. And here's a plug, okay? Because that was so good, so I'm going to do this. On Memorial Day, actually, on PBS, there is a documentary called Canine Soldiers. And I had the director in twice, and we had lovely talks about it, Nancy. This movie is incredible. I totally recommend you see it. It touches on dogs with PTSD, and that's what made me think about it. I got to see it at the screening in New York a couple weeks ago, and it's really, really an exceptional film. And it's going to be on your local PBS on Memorial Day. So if you're interested in that sort of thing, check it out, because it's actually really, really fascinating.
I've heard about it. I've heard it's really touching. I heard it can be a tearjerker.
Oh, my God. I cried. It was like the credits rolled. I was like, oh, God, it's so sad. But it's a really, really great story, too. Nancy Scazzeri, that's it. All right, so let's go to our next thing that we all know that's totally wrong. Let's talk about designer breeds.
Excellent.
Yay.
So I think of designer breeds, I think the Labradoodle crystallized the designer breed moment.
Yeah.
We've had cockapoos around for a long time.
And, yeah, totally.
But they're like an accepted non-designer breed. Mm-hmm. But with the advent of the Labradoodle that were originally designed, and if you actually find, there's an interview by the guy who came up with the Labradoodle. Hmm. He was a breeder down in Australia, and he was trying to find hypoallergenic guide dogs that had the intelligence and the working drive, again, the drive, to become guide dogs down there.
Okay.
And he had no intention whatsoever for the Labradoodle to become the thing that it is today.
Oh, no.
He actually regrets what he created. He's like,
I
created a monster. So, you know, and it's interesting if you see the quote unquote real Labradoodles from Beverly Hills, but no, they're not housewives. But the real, I've had a couple patients I've taken care of that were some from the original Labradoodle
stock.
What do
they look like?
They're great dogs.
Really?
I will give credit to that. The Labradoodles overall, I think, are really nice dogs. They're easy to train. When people ask for a family-friendly breed that is pretty hard to mess up, go with they're the Labradoodles. Some of them do shed, but the original ones, they look like teddy bears.
Yeah. Okay.
And their coats are really dense, but they don't have the shedding part, and some of them can't shed because you can have the Labrador component of it, and labs shed like crazy.
Yeah, they do.
It's the poodle that takes away the shedding part, and if you have a Labradoodle, that's an F1, and then you go down the line, then you're going to take away the hopeful components of the shedding part.
Okay.
And they're 50, 55 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah, they're nice sized dogs, but they're sturdy.
Okay.
They get the sturdiness more of the Labrador size versus the poodle side.
Okay.
And they're cute. And they're nice.
Then I've been seeing bad ones because I'm seeing like ballerina ones.
So there's people have done all sorts of weird things to them now.
Right.
So because the Labradoodle became a thing and it became trendy, and then people started breeding dogs together that they weren't doing the background checks on them.
Oh no!
So any good breeder worth their snuff is going to do, you know, check their hips, check their genetic history.
Yeah.
Make sure they're good breeding stock. And a lot of people now, unfortunately, are just mixing these two together. A lot of them are coming from puppy mills.
Mm.
And they're making them smaller. So there's like the mini doodles and the petite something, something, whatevers.
God, I hate that.
Yeah. And those are the ones that we're beginning to see problems with. And we are beginning to see some of the genetic components that we'll see either from labs and more from the poodles, interesting.
Really?
That are coming up. Autoimmune disorders.
Right.
Yeah.
Perfect.
So allergies, bad allergies.
Kidding.
Yeah, so things that we typically would think of as, you know, quote unquote mutts, and these guys are not mutts, and you know, people buy them for $3,000 or $4,000.
Holy crap, are you serious?
Yeah. So
Jesus, man, I haven't bought a dog in a long time.
Yeah, no, that's kind of like the going rate.
Wow.
And because people, they'll bring their paperwork in when they buy these puppies, and sometimes the rate's still there, and I'm just like, wow, that's a lot of money for this little dog.
So basically, you're getting quote unquote a hyperallergenic dog, but if you get a bad one, then you're getting one that has every allergy known to man.
You potentially can.
Awesome.
But that can happen with any dog. You can have, and I've got mutts who've got allergies.
Yeah.
So I mean, anybody can have allergies. It's just kind of the luck of the draw. I've got, you know, mixed breed dogs who unfortunately have hip dysplasia.
Mm-hmm.
It is you're less likely to have a chance, you know, with these diseases with a mixed breed dog, but it doesn't mean it's a guaranteed thing.
So what's the difference between a designer breed and a mutt? Besides $3,000.
Pretty much $3,000. So, you know, it's something when I see like these first generations where like the mom was a poodle. And, you know, another big one is a Bernedoodle.
What's that?
Bernese Mountain Dog Poodle.
So how big is that thing?
They're about 55, 60 pounds.
Oh, okay. That's not bad.
Again, very nice, friendly dogs. Bernese Mountain Dogs are, for those who don't know, Bernese Mountain Dogs are big.
Yeah, huge.
Yeah, 80, 90 pounds. They're riddled with cancer, unfortunately.
Really?
And they're nice dogs. So they're really easy going.
They're sweet.
They have a lot of hair. Lots of hair. Big hair.
Yeah.
So
if you don't like to vacuum, this is not your breed.
This is not your breed. They should be in cool weather. They don't deal with heat. But they're really nice, friendly dogs. You know, so I've got one, it's a poodle, not me personally, one of my patients, it's a poodle, and then Bernard Cross.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it is kind of a mutt.
Yeah.
So,
I mean,
that came from Canada.
But it's just funny because it's like, I was talking about this recently, like when I was a kid, I was like, what is your dog? Oh, it's a mutt. Mm-hmm. Now it's like, it's a Dalmatian Russell, or, you know, like a golden, I don't even know what, like, you know, golden terrier. And it's like, what the hell is that? Why isn't that a mutt? You know?
Because they really are. But the thing is that people are subscribing to the notion that because it came, it was purposely bred where they, you know, two people put this dog and this dog together on the purpose to make puppies.
Mm-hmm.
And they came up with a fun, cute little name of it.
Totally.
And that's the thing. And so people are capitalizing on it. There was a BuzzFeed post that was running around this weekend of corgis mixed with other things.
Oh, God.
And then, I'm not going to lie, they're all really cute.
Yeah, I'll bet they are.
But on the other hand, you're paying money for a glorified mutt.
Yeah, you are, right?
So the question is, you know, are we okay with that ethically? You know, would you have rescued a dog otherwise? Like, where if you hadn't gotten this dog, what other dog would you have gotten?
Yeah.
And then, you know, I don't judge. Usually.
But like, that's the part that drives me nuts. It's because people are like, mutt. And I'll be like, look, I just got a cockapoo. And it's like, that's a mutt. Like, okay. Yeah. No, it's a very fancy dog.
So, but sometimes, so going into that though, and you know, when people are picking out whatever dog I think is appropriate for their family, and there's times when I'm just like, you know, I understand that you want to know where your dog is coming from. If you have small children, or if you have specific needs, or let's say you truly have allergies or things like that, then you need to know this dog that's coming into your house.
Yeah.
Is it a guarantee? No, but is the greater likelihood because you know the genetics, you know the raising, you know what this dog has gone through or not gone through.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's a decision that not every family has to make when they decide to bring a pet into their home. Because if you have the wrong fit, it's a disaster.
And then you end up
with a dog that ends up in the shelter or in the rescue system.
And then everyone hates you because you've gotten rid of your dog. And yeah, it's a bad, bad cycle.
So,
well, we are talking about all kinds of cool dog myths. We have to take a break for about a minute and a half. So stay tuned and we'll be back shortly.
This program is brought to you by Chefs Collaborative, a national nonprofit network with a mission to inspire, educate, and celebrate chefs and food professionals building a better food system. Chefs Collaborative members work to make sustainable practices second nature for every chef in the United States. Chefs Collaborative was founded in 1993 by visionary chefs including Rick Bayless and Alice Waters, who acknowledged the influential role of food professionals on our food choices, our collective personal health, the vitality of cultures, and the integrity of the global environment. Chefs Collaborative believes that the greater culinary community can be a catalyst for positive change by expanding the market for good food and helping to preserve local farming and fishing communities. Change menus, change lives. Learn more about Chefs Collaborative at chefscollaborative.org.
Hey, like what you hear? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. With fresh programming every week, we've got something for everyone. Trying to start your own food business? Concerned about where your food comes from? Looking for the best wine or beer to bring to a party? Find our shows on iTunes or Stitcher, or head to heritageradionetwork.org to listen live and subscribe to our newsletter.
And we are back talking to Dr. Taylor Truitt from the Vet Set, located in Carroll Gardens, Brooklyn. And we're talking about all kinds of doggy myths. One dog myth that a mutual friend of ours and colleague, Denise Herman of Empire the Dog, wanted to discuss was the concept about when you get a puppy, you get a blank slate.
No.
Next question.
Yeah. It's like saying when you have a baby born, you get a blank slate.
Yeah.
Honestly. Yeah. I mean, you're going to have a little nature, you're going to have some nurture. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the second you come out of whatever womb you come out of, you're going to start processing your experiences.
Totally.
And how you're going to process something versus how I process something mm-hmm. is going to be different. And it's the same thing with dogs. I mean, we'll have litter mates that come in and you'll see the personality differences totally. Between the two. I mean, if anybody who's got siblings probably has a similar, like, I can't believe we're related.
No, I know what you're talking about.
So it's a nice idea, but you're still going to have, going back to what we were talking about earlier with the pity types, you're still going to have genetics there.
Yeah.
And you're going to have traits, and you're going to have things that are going to dominate over other qualities.
And this is the topic that always blows people's minds if they get, like, the same type of dog over and over and over, and they're mm-hmm. like, well, I don't understand, because the last one didn't do this. And it's like, well, yeah.
But they're all different, though. Yeah. And there's, you know, I think there's reliability in different breed types of mm-hmm. personalities you can get. I have a Frenchie, and he's an introverted Frenchie. Oh, he's not the go get 'em, you know, run up to everybody Frenchie. He's more of an aloof Frenchie.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So
Parisian Frenchie.
Yes. He's like, I could care less about you. What do you have for me? Nothing. So, and even then, if you have something, I will take it and walk away.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, he's a jerk. I love him. but you go to certain breed types because you know that they fit well with your life. Either be size-wise, fur coat, personality types. But they're all going to have their quirks.
True. I mean, I had a Jack Russell whose favorite thing to eat was the crotch out of underpants, and it was disgusting.
It's
it was
a big dog issue.
So disgusting.
He's not the only one.
Well, but it was unbelievable. His dad was raised with cats, and so when I would hear stories about his dad, I never met him, but he'd hang out in bookshelves. Like, he'd climb up like a cat and, like, sit high.
Jack Russell.
Oh my God, Turbo would, like, literally climb. Like, I'd put my underwear, like, the top shelf, or, like, lock it in a closet and come back, and they'd be just shredded and just. It was like, where? How did you get these things?
My parents had a Jack Russell who lived to be 17 and a half named Vinny, and he was a rescue. He was actually seized by the police in a terrible case, and he was definitely a fixer-upper, and definitely mm-hmm. went through PTSD, and then came out on the other side a really, really good dog.
Oh, cool.
But he would steal everybody's panties.
Oh God.
And he would stash them in the garden or in the fireplace. The fireplace we always knew, because there was always a mess afterwards. And then during gardening season, my mom would be out in the springtime tilling the dirt, and out would come everybody's Cosabellas. Just another day for Vinny.
That's the worst thing, too, is they've got good taste. They don't take, like, the dollar panties. They're like, ooh, the $50 set. Ooh, these are nice.
Or companies.
Oh, that's always fun. Yeah, actually, my dog ate my best friend's dance belt. That was bad. Yep. I mean, if he's listening right now, he's going to be like, damn you, Turbo. It's so true.
It's funny when they're not yours, and it's funny when it's later.
Exactly. When the time passes, it's okay. Yep. Until then, it's not that amusing.
Or when the panties pass through and they don't go to surgery.
Oh, God. I mean, what's this? Yeah. Oh, you know what? Can we say this? If you ever see anything hanging out of your dog's butt, please don't pull it.
Yes, that's a good rule of thumb, even though that's your natural instinct is to pull through, but you can actually cause some damage to the colon there.
So as horrifying as it is, if you see this, just run them to the vet.
Take them to the vet. We'll take care of it.
Totally. Now, this is something that I'm really interested in because I've been seeing advertising for it on different websites and, like, some articles, but really not many, talking about anesthesia-free dental cleanings and how they're just as awesome as professional cleanings, like, for us and, you know, if you knock your dog out. So I've seen an animal's teeth get cleaned, and it's pretty much the same as what we get at the dentist. However, they're not going to sit there with a dental dam and a little apron around their neck and listening to their favorite songs, you know, so they have to anesthetize them. Yes. And so can you tell us what you think about this?
I would love to tell you my opinion on this. So yeah. Dental care is a big priority of mine, yeah. And I've done a lot of continuing education in it. Oh, going cool. back, if I could do it all over again, I would probably do a dental residency.
Really?
Yeah, no more education. So small bursts here and there. And I go probably about every 14 months, and I'll do a couple week-long courses cool. where we do stuff with under the guidance of boarded dentists. So here's how I compare it to people.
Okay.
So you can go to the dentist, get a full cleaning, and you know it's a little uncomfortable. They're up underneath your gum line. You've yeah. got to take x-rays, and it's a process.
Yeah.
Or you could get Crest whitening strips.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's the anesthetic-free cleaning. So what they,
really?
Yeah, it's the equivalent thereof. So what happens, and they, for people who aren't familiar, the anesthetic-free cleanings, they will hold your dog.
Oh my God.
Sometimes physically restrain
them.
Home. Yeah, they have to. No dog's going to sit there and hold still
Hell
for this.
No.
Oftentimes, it's people who aren't even vet techs, yeah. Let alone veterinarians, because no vet in their right mind is going to do this.
Nobody has the time.
Yeah, no one has the time
to.
Or believes in it
yeah.
because
yeah.
there's that. And they scrape the tartar off the teeth. So now think about when you go to the dentist after your teeth have been scaled, they get polished. And one of the most important things is that polishing, because you're taking the microgrooves out mm-hmm. of the tooth. The other thing is when you're doing the scrapings, you can't get behind the tooth. And yeah. there's teeth in the back that you just can't reach, even when they're anesthetized and we have full mobility of the
yeah,
mouth.
Yeah.
It's hard to get to some of those yeah. teeth back there and get on the inside and get in all the nooks and crannies. And you can't just sit there and take x-rays of an anesthetized pet. And 50% of cats' dental disease takes place underneath the gum line.
Really?
So like today I was talking to one of my clients who I'm going to do their cat's teeth on Friday. And there was a tooth in there. I was like, listen, this tooth could turn out great or I might have to extract it.
Yeah.
I can't tell by looking at it.
Yeah.
It's just in that zone where I'm like, yeah, that's one we're gonna have to pay attention to.
Mm.
But sometimes I'll look at cat's teeth, I'm like, oh, they look great, should just be a cleaning, which I never say anymore.
Yeah, no.
Because then you x-ray them,
oh, shit.
And then you find disease underneath it. And cats are, we can talk about cat dental disease on another show, because that's yeah, a whole
I would love
different
to,
thing.
Actually, because people just don't know, you know.
Yeah, they don't. And so it's just, you're doing them a disservice. So the teeth look pretty,
mm-hmm.
but they're really not in great shape. And there's a dentist who I adore. She's a veterinary dentist, Dr. Melinda Lomer out in California.
Mm-hmm.
And she's got some really interesting stuff on her website of dogs that came in, what they physically saw. So pictures of the teeth. And they looked lovely.
Mm-hmm.
And then they x-rayed them. And underneath the gum line, this poor dog, you know, it was a schnauzer.
Oh, no. They always have mouth problems.
Schnauzer, again, genetics.
Yeah, exactly.
But the poor dog had just, you know, all sorts and ended up having to have about 15 or 16
oh my
teeth
God.
Extracted. And the poor dog was suffering because the teeth looked
totally.
Okay. But nobody knew what they were looking at.
I mean, I just... Since you said the polisher, the only image in my mind is like somebody going up with those polishers to a dog is like, forget it.
Yeah.
I mean, never seen again.
And there's some horror stories out there, too. There's this one cat named Monkey, and he ended up, he had a an anesthetic-free, quote-unquote, cleaning, and they injured the frenulum, the area underneath
you're
the
kidding.
Tongue.
Oh, kidding.
It abscessed and bad.
Oh, Jesus.
And the cat ended up losing his life over this.
Oh, my God.
So it was just, you know, turned into this huge gaping wound. It got infected and then the soft tissue just went.
Ugh.
So, I mean, it really is. Your pets can die from this. And while you might, quote unquote, be saving some money right now,
yeah.
you really are doing them a disservice because you're not providing quality professional veterinary care to them. And you're not setting out what your goal is, which is to help your pet.
Yeah.
They look pretty.
Exactly. Well, that's the thing.
But,
and I mean, can you tell us also why, what's the reason for dental cleanings?
So you've got bacteria and plaque in your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to go up underneath the gum line.
Mm-hmm.
You need to clean that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are prone to certain types of dental disease based upon your breed type or species, I'm thinking a little bit more about cats right now,
mm-hmm.
They can have underlying lesions that are not detectable.
Wow.
And they hurt.
Yeah.
They hurt bad. Some of these cats, you'll take x-rays on their teeth. It looks like they've got a shotgun wound through it.
Oh, my God.
So, and the tooth looks pretty okay-ish.
Yeah.
So, we're going in there, and our goals here is to improve their systemic health, because we also know, too, same thing with people, is that when you have dental disease, it is going to affect the kidneys.
Yeah.
It is going to affect the heart. It is going to affect the lungs. And so, we want to intervene and stop those processes from happening.
Yeah.
Because I've seen it time and time again, where then you end up with these 14, 15-year-old pets. Their teeth are terrible shape. And we are seeing the side effects of, you know, years of dental neglect. And then you've got the kidney problems and all that. And it could actually, you know, start them on the downward spiral as to why we eventually lose them.
Okay. So let's say, you know, Joe Schmo goes and gets a puppy. Yep. And brushes his teeth every single day.
Good for him.
Still coming to you for cleaning.
Not as often.
Okay.
But one, he's already in the 1% of dog owners.
Yeah, no kidding, man.
So, I mean, I'll be the first to admit, I'm not even that good.
I don't do it.
And they've looked at studies on it. There was a study that was published, in the past 18 months or so, looking at, you know, the efficacy of owners brushing their dog's teeth and the frequency thereof.
Forget it.
And it really is. I mean, if you think about it, we floss and brush, you know, a couple times a day minimum. And we're still going in every 6 months.
Yeah, it's true.
If not more. So
it's a really good point.
Yeah. So it's not a bad thing. And I encourage my pet owners to do it. Mm-hmm. But also end all be all is that, you know, based upon breed type, smaller breed dogs are going to be prone to more frequent cleanings versus the larger guys. Mm-hmm. Genetics. It's like some people, they've never had a cavity in their life.
Yeah. My grandmother.
God bless her.
I know. Meanwhile, I had 20 by the age of 12.
Yeah. So it is what it is, you know, and you do what you can do. But they still need to go in because then it's those x-rays that are so critically important because we can only see so much. But the roots, you know, comprise probably about a third of the tooth is what we see. And mm-hmm. two-thirds of it's the root underneath the gum line.
And I mean, I've heard from people because I worked at a vet's office that, mm-hmm. you know, dentistry is just, you know, BS for animals. You just want to make their teeth look pretty and they don't need pretty teeth. And so I think I think the general public is getting better about that one.
They're getting educated on it. They're learning about it. And I think, you know, I take a full set of x-rays on every patient that we do.
Nice.
And that's just our hospital protocol. Mm-hmm. And when you see it, it's interesting because I'll use these now to go back and show the pet owners. I'm like, here's what we did. And they see it and they're like, holy crap. And I'm like, yeah, this is what we did and why we did it and why these teeth needed to come out too.
Yeah.
And people then, you know, sometimes being telling an owner that their pet's teeth need to be extracted. It can be a little emotional. Mm-hmm. And then we just go through them like, listen, they don't necessarily need them.
Yeah.
They don't have any sort of like social agenda with their teeth.
That's true.
So it's okay if they're missing their front tooth. In fact, it's sometimes kind of cute. And
that's wild. Are there like dental implants for pets yet at this point?
Yes, there are.
Oh my God.
Yeah. If you want to go big, you know, you can get into, there's a lot of stuff that we can do. You know, there's some Persian kitties that have, they have little gold grills.
No, they don't.
And it's for medical purposes.
Uh-huh.
So because they're just, usually the two options are take the teeth out.
Okay.
Because of the condition that they're facing. Or if you, you know, if kitty's got a trust fund.
Yeah. Oh my God. I want to see a cat with a grill.
It's amazing. Cause you know, Persians always have that chronically pissy look on their face and they're like, grr.
Like gangsta kitty. Here we go.
Yeah, no, they really are. It's a thing, but from a medically necessary point. But we do root canals on pets.
Really?
Yeah, especially like the canines, where those are important teeth, and we want to save those if we can.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if they, let's say that a dog fractures his tooth, which is common.
Yeah, totally.
As a side note right now, this is my little public service announcement. Those big knuckle bones will destroy your dog's teeth.
Oh, God.
So if you want to come see me.
You're right.
Give them the knuckle bones. Please don't do those, though. They're really destructive because you have a hard force. You have a bone and you have a tooth.
Yeah.
You have them grinding together. Something has to give, and it's not going to be the bone.
What do you think about raw bones?
They're destructive.
Still are, huh?
Yeah, they will. They'll destroy your dog's teeth.
So what do you recommend for chewing?
You want to find, I like there's hybrid products that are out there right now that kind of have like a little bone, but they have like, there's Nyla bones that have, you know, some mixed in stuff.
Oh, cool.
You need to find something that's going to give when you have the sheer force placed onto it.
Okay.
So if you have a hard chewer, you need that product to give.
Okay.
Because if not, the tooth is going to give.
Yeah.
And you can tell like the second I see, you know, it's a certain type of injury. It's called a slab fracture and it's on the rear teeth.
Oof.
And the second I see it, I'm like, your dog chews, doesn't he? He's like, yep. And I'm like, hard, right? And they're like, yep. And I'm like, yeah. And here we are.
And chewing is part of a dog's, chewing is kind of like a dog's cigarette. It's kind of like their moment of relaxation. Yeah, so they need to. So don't like take stuff away because then they eat your couch.
Yeah. No, they release serotonin when they chew.
Cool.
Yeah. So they need release, but we need to pick appropriate things. And those knuckle bones are nice because they last forever.
Yeah, that's the thing.
But, you know, when you're looking at a dog who's fractured his teeth, and, you know, it's a $1,500 surgical process to get those suckers out.
Yeah.
I think your decision should be made with that.
I think so too. And that's the thing too. I mean, pets are an investment. They're not like, so many people think that, you know, oh my God, I got a cat or a dog and yay. And then you go, they take them to the vet and they're like, oh my God. And I get it. I've been there, you know, but like, what is it? I don't remember now. It's something like the first year of care for a dog is $4,000. And the first year of cat for a cat is like $1,500 or something like that.
That sounds about right. I think I saw something not that long ago, perhaps in the Times, that the lifetime cost of owner ownership in a major metropolitan area was about $42,000.
Holy crap. Are you serious?
All in. All vet care, pet sitters, dog walkers.
Okay, that's fair enough.
You know, dog food, like toys, you know.
Okay.
But, you know, that's...
That's substantial.
It's substantial.
Cheaper than a kid, but... You know.
They don't have to go to college. So,
okay. Probably our final question.
Yes.
Let's talk about pet store dogs.
Okay.
I hate this topic.
It's terrible.
I know. We need to talk about it. I just got a dog from a breeder in Oklahoma.
That dog came from a puppy mill.
But he has papers.
Congratulations. That dog came from a puppy mill.
But he's got 45,000 allergies.
That dog could have come from anywhere.
Yeah.
So, no, there's the pet stores. Some states are outlawing them. New Jersey's on track now.
I think
San Francisco,
just banned it.
Yeah. Boston just did.
Awesome.
New York City, we really need to get on this.
We're slow.
I think her name is Representative Rosenthal, Upper West Side. She's a state rep and she's actively engaging on this. So if you want to go support a woman who does some cool stuff, she's also anti-declaw.
Nice.
She's a smart representative.
Oh, I like her.
Yeah, she's in my district. I get to vote for her.
So,
we're behind on it and they're trying, but the pet store lobby people are pushing against it because these puppies, they get shipped in and they're from puppy mills, end of story.
Okay.
And the other thing that if you go, let's say you decide you want to breed,
right.
A specific breed, not to breed dogs. If you go online and say, you know, French bulldog puppy, you're going to find these websites and, they're very pretty and they're very glossy and they have tons of dogs from all over the place. Those are all puppy mill puppies.
What about the ones that are like, you know, oh, you're looking for a dog? Well, we happen to know someone in Arkansas, so we can ship your, we're going to put your puppy on a plane by itself for you to pick up at the airport.
So if you see any, like, I hate to say it, but you should have an open conversation with a breeder. If you're going to get a purebred dog, you need to go talk to the breeder, see the breeder. If your dog is being shipped in from the middle of the country, and I'm from there, so I can say these things, you know, there's a lot of puppy mills out there, and they're disgusting.
Yeah.
Missouri has more puppy mills than any other state in the country. But oddly enough, the Amish in Pennsylvania.
I've heard this.
They're into the puppy mill scene. And if you go to the website and you see that they are USDA sanctioned or they advertise that, that is a surefire marker that that is a puppy mill.
No shit.
Because they have so many dogs, they have to be regulated by the USDA.
Oh my God.
So,
and meanwhile, you would think, like, oh my God, they're legit because USDA. It's like, wait a second.
No. Because a real a proper breeder is maybe having a litter, maybe two a year.
Yeah.
Or they're going to invite you to come see.
Yeah.
You want to go look. I can promise you, you can find your breed nearby that you can go and visibly inspect what's going on right now.
My friend's mother has been breeding tricolor cockers for forever, basically, you know, and she has maybe, at this point, maybe three litters a year max.
Yeah.
Nobody ain't getting those puppies unless they show up. She knows where the dog is going. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, breeders, good breeders really care about their animals. They're not going to, if you show up at their house, like, can I have a dog? If they go, sure, honey, and hand you one, this is not someone who cares about these dogs.
No. Or they meet you in a parking lot.
That's shady.
But it happens.
Jesus.
Yeah, there's weird people doing weird things.
It's such a shame, you know? It's like...
And then it happens with these pups. And I see this here in New York and, you know, in very fancy little pet stores.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen these dogs come out. They get spayed at a very young age.
Too young. Huh?
Because they're supposed to be spayed and neutered before they go out, which I agree with that idea, so they don't go get more bred.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, some of them, they develop nasty pneumonias.
Totally.
We had a mini little Australian Shepherd we took care of who just turned out to be a dream dog. But she was was hospitalized with us for over a week.
Oh my God.
Horrible pneumonia. And yeah, I mean, it was intense and it was touch and go for a little bit. And we got her through it. Now she's fine. And she's my dog's underage girlfriend.
Aww.
But yeah, they love each other because she spent that first week in the hospital with my little snotty French bulldog.
And so what about these people that, you know, I was walking by the pet store and I saw him and he looked so sad and I just had to save him. Like, what happens to those dogs in the pet stores if they don't get sold?
So that's actually an interesting question. At some point, they will reduce the price down to get them out the door.
Okay.
And because they need to get them at that point. I don't know where they're going to get sold.
Yeah.
But they're going to get sold at a discount.
That's also kind of a little like
shady.
Yeah. It becomes product. It's no longer a being.
Yeah. No, that's all they are. It's just all product.
It's so sad.
It's an entity. Dogs and cats are property.
Yeah, they are.
And
legally, right?
They're still legally property. Yeah. And, you know, that's a whole other philosophical debate on as to whether or not they should be, you know, what they should be qualified as.
Yeah.
But they're property.
And I mean, the one thing is that one of the definitions that I'm hearing over and over for animal respect and animal rights is sentient being. Mm-hmm. And it's a great term, but I think for a lot of people, it's almost sounds like woo-woo. You know, so it's like, oh, yes, then we do our yoga and we're sentient beings, that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
So I wish there was a better definition that didn't sound like that. And it's just the tone of the word, you know what I mean? Like, the word is right, but it's too, like, ooh,
it's too,
you know?
I think it was Peter Singer that did some weird stuff in that category. Mm. And he's, for those of you guys who are, he's an activist. He's a little far out there.
Yeah,
very
is.
Far out there. Professor, where is he? It's Princeton, I believe.
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got a whole, like...
Super smart, but woo!
Yeah, definitely sometimes a little direct connection from Pluto.
Yeah, totally. but smarty pants.
But there's some things that you can just pick and choose from it. But it comes down to, if you don't buy your dogs on the internet.
Yeah.
I mean, just general good rule right there. Don't go to a pet store. They will at some point end up somewhere, but you're supporting the trade. And actively, you know, talk to your representatives about stopping these trades because it's slowly happening. And in smart, in, you know, more progressive areas, they are outlawing it.
Good.
What's here? Phoenix, Arizona.
No way.
Yeah.
All right.
So Phoenix
Go
can do
Phoenix.
It.
Seriously. So, yay, Phoenix. All right.
And they actually were the first ones.
No kidding.
Yeah. Good
wow.
for them.
Seriously good for them.
Yeah.
Hats off. And I'm angry at New York City because we're progressive here and we're so not progressive compared to the rest of this country at this point.
There's some weird stuff that just kind of lingers here. Yeah. You know, it's New York.
I don't know. You know, we're busy doing stupid things right now. We're not even taking care of what we need to. So, you know, we need more, you know, like areas for people to picnic in the middle of an avenue. Yeah, that's a great idea. It won't affect traffic at all.
No, we need a new Penn Station.
Jesus. No that's kidding. Oh my God. That's a whole other one.
But talk to your local reps. Honestly, This is where it starts, is at the city board level.
Cool.
And that's where you can really have local impact on it. Because most people, what it comes down to is that, you know, no one doesn't like dogs. They might not own a dog.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're on a city board and you say you don't like dogs, that's not good for re-election. But it really is. It's a very local issue. And that's where you can have a lot of great impact on it. Because most people get behind it. I think there's nobody who's going to be pro-puppy mill unless they own a puppy mill.
Totally.
So.
Or like, I got my dog from a puppy mill and he's fine. I mean, just the term itself it amazes me how shady the laws can be to protect these guys.
Well, they always come with something though. That's the thing is like anytime, you know, and every new puppy that comes in through my doors, we check a fecal sample on them. And I've got puppies who come from, you know, great places, rescues all over the place, random places where like, I've just found the puppy, you know?
Yeah.
And for the most part, most of them do have some sort of GI parasite and that's just the name of the game.
It is, yeah.
But the worst ones I see are the pet store pups.
Really?
Yeah, because they've been bred through these areas where it's just concentrated parasites.
Gross.
Over and over and over again.
Gross.
And so you're already starting off with a puppy who's at a disadvantage.
Totally. And then more vet bills and then sicker pet. And then you get upset because your pet's sick all the time and you're paying the vet a fortune. And
You've got resistant things, you know, and it's it's frustrating for everybody and most of all the puppy.
It's fascinating though.
Really,
really fascinating.
Weird way.
Yeah, I know, in a horrible way, but it's like, wow, you know.
It's an industry. There's money to be made, and as long as there's money to be made, we'll do it.
That's the key, and I think that's the thing to remember is, you know, that's a good point. If you're walking through the mall and you see some dog reduced, I mean, that's a pretty huge red flag right there.
Yeah, and then the question is, well, do I go get the reduced puppy and get him out of there? And, you know, sometimes it's not a bad thing.
I know, that's the thing.
But... what do you do? Good for the individual, bad for the population.
Exactly. Exactly. So keep it in mind next time you're looking for a pet, because it's definitely something that we need to end in this country and worldwide, for that matter.
Exactly.
We are almost out of time.
It goes so fast.
I know. I love talking to you. It's so much fun, man. We have a good time. So we got about 2 minutes left. Any myth that you think needs to be discussed real quick that we haven't covered?
No, I would say more than anything, the myth that puppies are easy.
So, ooh, that's good.
Yeah, puppies require a lot of work. I've had seasoned mothers come in in tears over the puppy. They're like, the kids were easier. So, but yeah, they're a lot of work. And it's amazing work. And when you have, you know, you get your dog and you go through everything and you end up 18 months later with a really, really awesome dog.
Totally.
It happens, but they don't just grow on trees.
Yeah.
So you have to, every single puppy comes in and you have to guide them through this. It's a guidance process.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So where can people find you to come bring their pets and do all kinds of groovy things?
Our amazing hospitals in Carroll Gardens, Brooklyn, 577 Henry Street, between First and Carroll. You can find us on Facebook at VetSetNYC, and you can give us an email at info@vetset.net.
Sounds great. And it's a brand new practice. It's pretty.
It's beautiful.
Oh my God, it's gorgeous. It's squeaky clean. It's spotless. All of it. So if you're in the neighborhood, check them out, because they're super, super nice people.
We also have, we've got rescue kittens up for adoption right now.
No.
Yeah, we've adopted about 15 cats so far this year.
Holy cow. Congratulations.
Yeah, they bring them in. We turn them out.
Awesome.
But if you need, we've got two sets of kittens right now that are looking for forever homes, and they're amazing.
Cool. So thank you guys for listening. I will be back next week with a brand new episode. Brand new episode. There we go. We're doing a new format, people. It's going to be awesome. Anyway, new episode next week. So thank you for listening. If you want to find me on Instagram, it's Animal Instinct Radio. On Twitter, it is @FoodHealer. And there is a Facebook page for Animal Instinct. So you just got to look. It's Animal Instinct 73. Thank you so much, and we'll talk soon. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.